Hey everybody, this is Shane McCormick from the Cheap Home Grow Podcast. On today's show, we have an independent home grower by the name of Bob. He can be found on Instagram at johnsmith710420. And today he comes on the show to talk about growing sativas indoors and how to set up a grow tent. Please remember to press subscribe and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Cheap Home Grow Podcast, a show for individuals that want to learn more about growing cannabis indoors. This is a podcast dedicated to helping you with your indoor growing adventure. You'll learn how to grow your own and not have to rely on others for your medicine. The Cheap Home Grow Podcast will also feature timely interviews with cannabis industry veterans shaping the culture and politics of cannabis. All right. Here is your host, Shane McCormick, and the Cheap Home Grow Podcast.
On today's show, Bob is going to be talking about why sativas are ideal for growing indoors. But before we do, he is going to give a background about himself and his growing style. And then after that, we can get right into the conversation. So Bob, if you would, could you please tell my audience about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Bob. I'm a home grower right now. I learned to grow outdoors. I moved it indoors. I like indoors more because I have better control, total control over the environment. I like growing different strains. I prefer sativas. And I found that I can create the ideal environment indoors for whatever strain I'm growing.
Okay, fair enough. I guess my first question is, why do you prefer to grow sativas indoors?
In the beginning, it was mostly sativas that we were growing outdoors. So it was what I was accustomed to growing with. And then, during the mid-late 70s on into the early 80s, there was an influx of indica seeds coming to the area in the Pacific Northwest. And the breeders started taking these seeds and crossing them with the longer flowering sativas because the sativas would grow really huge in the trees. And they would take as many as 22-plus weeks to flower. So the idea was to use the indicas to bring down the size and to shorten the flowering times. As it worked out, a lot of the indica strains that they were bringing through and Afghani strains were, acclimated pretty good to that area because it sits along the same latitudes. The projects worked pretty good. A lot of those strains become acclimated. And they eventually, today, we have sativas that can flower in as little as 8 or 9 weeks and maintain a relative size of 6 foot or less, which are perfect for the indoor environment. I prefer sativas. I like adventure weed. I like to do things, get up and go, be active. I like to be creative in my mind. I like to do things. And it's also what helps me on a medical level the best.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, would you say that sativas have helped your creative ability in terms of growing cannabis indoors?
Oh, absolutely. I think sativas open your mind up on a more, not to be cliche, but a more cosmic level. And it's all about the interaction between the grower and the plant, to the point to where sometimes I question who's growing who here. Am I growing the plant or is the plant growing me? It's a symbiotic relationship. The plant feeds off of my energy and I feed definitely off the plant's energy. I think we take a little bit of each other in the process. I believe that you can always tell if you're familiar with your growers and who's growing your medicine. I think you can always tell who grew it. For example, I had a friend once that, for how I was feeling, he was just that type of person that could lift your spirits up and make you laugh and I laugh just thinking about him now, but he grew, and his weed was the same way. His medicine was the same way. You'd smoke it, and instantly, no matter what the problem was, you just feel better and uplifted, and everything became hilariously funny, kind of like the first couple times you might have smoked. It's to where I sampled products from people that, shall we say, are kind of sketchy and paranoid, and it seems like their medicine imparts those same qualities when you partake.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, how is growing sativas indoors different from any other strain?
Well, I don't think we really are. I think some sativas, because of their nature, and they come from most of the strains that people grow originate north of 27 degrees latitude, which is the opposite of a lot of sativas. So your environmental conditions are totally different for the two plants. The requirements are different. I think indicas and indica dominant plants can be, shall we say, pushed with nutrients to a point as to where sativas require a little more finesse, a little more gentler hand. They don't seem to be quite as resilient, although some strains can be. They just seem a little more finicky, I think, and plus the flowering times can go a little longer, especially if you're doing organics, trying to do living organics in a container and maintain microlife. It gets a little tricky. You need a little bit of skill and knowledge.
Right. Okay. Well, let's delve deeper there. Like, in terms of skill, in terms of knowledge, in terms of growing sativas indoors, if you were a brand new home grower, let's say you've gotten a few grows under your experience there. How would you go about, or what suggestions, what tips would you give that person that wants to grow sativas indoors? And what are some things that you would say to that person?
Okay, I assume this is a person that already has their environment or whatnot under control, right?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we can delve deeper a little bit there, too. But, yeah, sure. I mean, let's assume that, you know, they have their grow set up. It's already indoors. It is a proper setup.
Okay, well, first off, I would start. And this could really apply to most strains that you're growing if you know the dominant parentage in it, the dominant lineage. Do a little bit of research. Find out where that strain originated from. Find out what's in it. Find out what's mostly dominant in it. Find out where those genes come from, where they originated. Look at that, the outdoor climate from where it came from. Follow the months till harvest. See how the weather changes. Try and replicate nature in your indoor grow at all times. And that would probably be a good place to start. Plus, it also matters to some degree, do some research on who bred this seed, under what kind of conditions did they breed the seed, because a lot of times the seed will grow the best for the grower under the same conditions that seed was created in. So along with the information you have from the genetic lineage and where it comes from geographically in that climate, you should do pretty good armed with that knowledge.
Okay. All right, fair enough. What are some things, that a new home grower that's growing sativas indoors, I guess, shouldn't do? I mean, what are, you know, some things that you would highly discourage?
Well, just in general, especially when it comes to sativas, less is always more. I know as growers, sometimes we have a tendency to want to maybe if I give it a little more of this or a little more of that, but and it's my experience that is definitely not the way to go. Less is more. give it 3 or 4 days to see what you just did. If it needs more at that point, give it a little more the next time. Everything's fine.
Well, you know, Bob, I don't mean to interrupt, but what do you mean by less is more? Can you explain that?
As far as like nutrients, additives, things like this, this is a lot of where growers mess up. They get impatient, especially new growers have a tendency, and even experienced growers. I do it myself from time to time. I just want to create the best conditions for the plant, and I guess I'm trying to say by over-pampering it, not just over-pampering, but sometimes overfeeding or using maximum amounts of nutrients. If the nutrient bottle says to give it 5 milliliters per gallon, if you're using that, a chemical formulation, give it 3 and see how that works. That's what I meant by less is more. The other thing I would suggest, and this would be good advice for anybody, not just with sativas, but don't change or add more than one thing at a time and give it time to see what that one thing did. It's a process and it takes time.
Right. So basically you're saying, you know, if you were to change something, change one thing at a time and monitor that change. Is that the gist of what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. If you change more than one thing at a time, you have no idea whether it produces a good or a bad result. You don't know which one did it. You'll never know. So my advice would be if you're using a new supplement, a new additive, a new technique, I know you may have a lot of thoughts on your mind that you want to try, but you're probably not going anywhere. You're probably not going to lose passion in your interest. And you have time to do this, but only do one thing at a time. That way you can monitor a better result.
Right. Okay. Well, that certainly makes sense. What are mistakes that you have personally made with your grows? I know you've been growing for many decades, but, you know, I mean, what are some things, I guess, to watch out for when you're starting to first grow your own?
Okay, well, like I said, you want to start off slow. Again, that maxim that I used before, less is more, would apply not only to nutrients in your approach, but it would also apply if you're a new grower as far as, like, lighting and system goes. Start out with something small. Maybe if you're thinking about growing or just getting into it, start out with something small, maybe a 250, a 400-watt light. The same would apply to systems. Don't go buy the newest aeroponic system or DWC system that's out on the market. Use some soil or a soilless mix. It's much more forgiving. I kind of liken it to your first car, getting your first car. Your father probably didn't buy you a Pagani Zonda to go poodle around in. You probably wouldn't be here today if he did. The same would apply to systems and your approach to growing. You need to learn to walk before you run.
Sure. Sure, yeah. I mean, that certainly makes sense. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I can attest to that, you know, with my past grows. Sure. Absolutely.
I'm sure all of us can.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Now, I mean, we briefly talked off air about how you are a fan of growing organically. Now, I mean, how does growing, I mean, well, I mean, how do you mix organic growing while you're growing sativas? I mean, you know, do they mesh well together? I mean, how does that all work?
Absolutely, they mesh well together. Like I said, sativas are a little more long-term. So it really comes down to, like, with maintaining sativas in the microlife, it comes down to top dressing techniques. And to maintain the microlife, you're doing actively aerated microbial extracts, or AAMEs, teas as some people call them. They're biologically active, and it's a different mindset growing organically than is to where you're growing hydroponically or using a liquid chemical nutrient. I liken it to kind of like an athlete. You know, hydroponic and chemical growing is kind of like an athlete sitting on a couch, and that's all he's really doing is sitting on a couch. And he's getting meals delivered to him, high-protein, high-carbohydrate meals, 5-6 times a day. And he's just watching Netflix, and that's all he does. He doesn't even move. And he's going to get huge really, really quick. And, you know, your harvest time is speeded up by a little bit using chemicals or hydroponics. But then again, you know, the other way with organics, it's a whole different mindset. It's kind of like the same athlete, but instead of sitting there delivering his meals to him, he's actually training 24/7 and he has to work for his meals. So, you know, it's a whole different process. One, you're feeding the plant. One, you're feeding the soil. You put the right amount of nutrients in there. Transplanting often helps. You know, but I'm able to flower when I finish starting from seed, given a 5-month window to a harvest there, I'm able to harvest decent quality plants, sativa dominant plants in 5-gallon bags. So, you know, everything works out pretty good.
All right. Okay. All right. Fair enough, Bob. Fair enough. Now, Bob, I mean, you know, We met on Instagram. I reached out to you, and I was looking at your Instagram page, and, you know, I gotta say, you have a pretty extensive, or at least it looks you have a pretty extensive indoor growing setup. I mean, could you walk my audience through that and, you know, explain how you did what you did there? Because it's, you know, I got to say, I mean, it kind of reminds me of Breaking Bad, you know, a little bit, you know, when he goes and, you know, I mean, you know, and he goes and cooks that mess. But, I mean, you know, I'm not saying, you know, you don't do that. But could you just explain to my audience, you know, what your indoor setup is all about?
Sure, I'll try. I guess I started outdoors at the power box, and I had a 240 box that was pulling nothing. There was nothing, no breakers in there. There wasn't using any power. So I went ahead and pulled 240 from that, ran it into my house in sub panels, split that electric into two 110 units. So everything in my grow room has its own independent dedicated circuits. I guess to start with, to keep the grow room cool, I installed a mini split unit AC. That's the only way we can really cool things down here. I have a 4-inch intake fan that brings fresh air from the outside into the grow room. I have a 6-inch extraction fan that sucks the stale air out of the room. And dispels it into the outside. I run a 3-light system. I run 2 400-watt metal halides and a 315 ceramic metal halide during veg. And then during flowering, I'll switch to 2 400s out and run 2 1000 HPS lights along with the 315 metal halide. Everything is controlled by a brain, the intake, the exhaust. I supplement with CO2. It's also controlled by the brain. It monitors humidity, temperature. I run what I like to call a semi-sealed room. People talk about sealed rooms, but in sealed rooms, it's also important. That's why I have the extraction still, because you have other gases, such as ethylene, that build up. and these need to be expelled along with other byproducts that bring that come up. So right now it's still kind of warm where I'm at, so I'm running the extraction every 3 hours. When it cools off a little bit next month, I'll probably run it every 6 hours, and that would be sufficient. I run 1,000 cubic feet grow room. The finished plants are 5.5 to 6 foot. It's about a dozen plants that totally fill that room up. It has dehumidification system. It also has a humidity system, so I'm good to go whether I'm vegging or flowering. It's just a matter of flipping a switch, setting different values in the brain. I don't rely totally on electronic equipment. I'm more of an observation kind of guy. The first thing I do when I go in the room is I observe the plants. I use all the systems that I have in place to check what I already suspect, and they help. And that may be a point not to get off track, but I'd also like to mention, don't rely too much on your electronics. More time you spend with the plants, the more intuition you can grow, and that's the best thing you can have in your grow room as far as a monitor goes, is your own sense of observation.
Okay. All right, yeah. Not big on latest and greatest, you know, tech goods. You're, I mean, it certainly sounds like you are truly old school and you rely on touch, feel, and the look of the plant. Is that correct?
You're absolutely correct. And at the end, I'm rewarded with all that love.
Right. That's more than fair. Now, I mean, I'm looking at your Instagram now, and, you know, for everybody that is listening, you can go check Bob at johnsmith710420 on Instagram. You can go there and, you know, check out his grow room. He's got a bunch of photos, and it looks really high-end, man. I mean, it's very impressive, I have to say. It's extremely, extremely good. There's no doubt about that. You know, is this the answer to this question, but, you know, I'm going to ask it anyway. Is this grow room, is this a setup that you specifically set up for sativas, or can you grow any type of strain that you want indoors for your setup?
I can accommodate any type of strain that strikes my fancy, and that's what I do. I normally look for something where there's a void on the normal market, on the flavor of the week. I tend to gravitate more towards more unique type combinations involving landrace strains along those lines.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, why landrace strains? Why?
Well, you know, the heritage strains also do a little dabbling in breeding, and that's where a lot of those come in. You know, they're a different subject, but, you know, I think a lot of that's being done the wrong way today. I know what I like, and I know what I feel that it's important to preserve. You know, everybody has their own opinions, but I have many motivations for working with the landrace strains, but I find that I get better results with those, more stable results over the successive generations.
All right. Okay, yeah, that's, well, I mean, as long as you're getting better results, then, you know, all the better, right?
Well, that, and, you know, not to come off high-handed or anything, but, you know, I think one of the things that's lacking a lot is a lot of knowledge, for one thing, and then even some people with the knowledge and skills, there's a little bit of ethics and morals lacking, and I think, you know, a lot of what you're doing today, breeding and some of the things you're creating, we're headed in the wrong way, and we're destroying a lot of allies in the gene pool that that you know we can never recover again once it's gone. So I had many reasons for doing that, but yeah, it works for me really in the end. That's what it's all about, whatever works for the individual.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Now, I mean, Bob, I mean, let me ask this before the show ends. I mean, and this is a question, you know, that I like asking everybody that comes on the show. You know, is there any questions that I'm missing? Is there any, you know, is there any statements that you would like to make?
No, not really. I think we pretty well covered most of it. Again, I'd just like to reiterate, you know, if you're starting out, keep it simple. Only change one thing at a time. And learn to speak the language of the plant. That's the most important thing you can do. The plant will talk to you and tell you everything it needs. And in the end, that's all we are. We're just caretakers for the plant. We created nothing. We did nothing. And the indoor environment is very limited. And you, referring to my room, I have all the peripherals, but when it comes down to it, the most limiting factor that we have in the grow room today facing the indoor grower is lighting. As I said, I run the 1,000 HPSs when I flower. Each of those are capable. They throw out about 145,000 lumens apiece.
Okay.
But it's all about spectrum, and there's advances coming on that I'm excited about in the lighting industry, but basically lights haven't changed much, the design of them, in over 60 years. So that's a limiting factor. So get out and start by learning your environment. Don't jump out and build the baddest, biggest grow room you can try and grow and add CO2. Learn to control the environment. It's key, and it's harder than it sounds. Once you get that under control and you feel confident enough, move on to something bigger and better. And remember, just don't change more than, or add more than one thing at a time so you can monitor results. I'm sorry. And that's about it, I guess.
Yeah, sure. All right, Bob. Listen, man, I do appreciate you coming on the show, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
All right, great.
All right, Bob.
It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate it, and I've enjoyed myself, and I hope your audience has enjoyed it also.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to my podcast with Bob. You can check him out on Instagram at johnsmith710420. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and please remember to press the subscribe button. You can visit cheaphomegrow.com/episode34 to get show highlights. And please remember to sign up for my email list. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Cheap Home Grow podcast. We do our best to bring you quality content. Let's grow together. Please hit the subscribe button and take time to share this podcast with a friend. Visit cheaphomegrow.com for our database of interviews and information. Until next time, be safe and grow easy.